Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
You know, Sunday was a day of upsets in the NFL. I'm not sure this was one. The Saints beat the Bears in overtime to tie the Bucs for top of the NFC South. That could change tonight when Tampa Bay plays against the Giants at MetLife Stadium on Monday Night Football. Are the Bucs the best team in the NFC? Jason Pierre-Paul says, I'm going to destroy the Giants. We've got all that and my interview with Brian Griese, one of the new stars of Monday Night Football, who will call tonight's game between the Bucs and the Giants on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Hey, folks, have you checked out our friends at Old Northeast Jewelers in 4th Street in St. Pete? They've been there for a long time. Well, now they have a brand new store in Hyde Park. That's right, beautiful place down there. The grand opening was back in October. If you haven't been there, the address is 1607 West Swan Avenue in Hyde Park Village in Tampa. Now, they've got the Grand Seiko. It's described as the pure essentials of watchmaking, elevated to a level of art. This is not your grandfather's Seiko. It's Grand Seiko. It's the ultimate in timekeeping, the ultimate in style, and the ultimate in collectability. Now, if you say that Rick Stroud sent you, they'll give you one extra year warranty on your purchase. That's Old Northeast Jewelers, of course, in St. Pete, and also now in their brand new store in Hyde Park. All right, Steve, it was weird being home on Sunday. I'm leaving today for the Monday Night Football game in the Meadowlands, and hopefully everything goes well and I make it in plenty of time. Of course, the game kickoff's not till like 8:25 or so, something like that. But I did have an opportunity to watch NFL football, which is, you know, when you cover it all the time, you really don't see many games. Sometimes a Sunday night game if you have a 1 o'clock, occasionally a Monday night game. But really, I don't get a chance to just sit there and watch the league. And of course, the greatest invention, I've got all these TVs now, but the greatest invention, I still say, is the NFL Red Zone. And let me tell you, the job that Scott Hansen does, who I've known when he used to be here in Tampa covering the Bucs for, I forget which station he worked for, but does an unbelievable job. I mean, this guy is on from, you know, 1 p.m. kickoff and until, you know, the end of the 4 o'clock games, and he's just nonstop. But the thing you realize is, and I, you know, this is cliche in the league a little bit, but boy, does it hammer at home when you watch games. Most games in the NFL are not won. They are lost. They are lost by teams that beat themselves. And it's incredible the amount of turnovers you see. You know, it's just about every 2 minutes or so, somebody is giving the ball back to somebody. And, of course, that's how you lose. But a lot of upsets. Las Vegas did very well in this Sunday in the NFL, for sure. The Packers lost to the Vikings. I didn't see that coming. The Vikings, Dalvin Cook had, I think, 4 touchdowns. He just
first
went
in
off
a long time that somebody's had 4 touchdowns at Lambeau, the opposition.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, if you're going to play the Packers at Lambeau, this is the time to do it. They have no fans there, so the mystique of Lambeau, you know, and the noise and the crowd and the leaps and all of that stuff, that's all sort of out the window. But man, Dalvin Cook, and I've never really quite understood why the Vikings were so bad this year. I mean, they had only won one game. But they certainly looked good against the Packers. And the other thing I'll say is that the Packers' defense, woof. It's just, you know, I mean, remember, the Bucs did score, including the defensive touchdown and the return to the 2-yard line, but they scored 38 straight points. And that was not a fluke. That is not a very good defense. They can't tackle. They don't cover all that well. But Dalvin Cook had himself a day. That was really interesting scene. And then, of course, in Miami, another team that I've been kind of eyeballing a little bit is the Los Angeles Rams. They were kind of on a roll and, you know, coming off a pretty good win themselves. Tua Tagovailoa was starting for the Miami Dolphins. His first play as a starter, at least. He had a couple plays the other day, but his first play as a starter, sack, fumble. lost the ball, and then quickly thereafter, you know, the Rams were in the end zone. But the Dolphins came back and beat the Rams soundly. They had, you know, I think a defensive touchdown. I think they had maybe a kick return for a touchdown. Tua was okay. Mm-hmm. He did throw a touchdown pass. I thought he was all right, but you know, it was really the special teams, and it was a team rallying around him, which is what you love to see. If you're the Miami Dolphins, you have a young quarterback making his first start. You can't put it all on his shoulders, so they went out there and they dominated other phases of the game, and they won the game. That's a big loss for the Rams.
Well, I still can't figure out the Rams, and we talked about this last week.
Can't either.
I mean, they've won five games, but they've won all four against the NFC East, and they beat the Bears.
Yeah.
So, right. I mean, they haven't beat anybody yet.
No.
I mean, their losses are the Dolphins, the Bills, who are good, and the Niners.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we know anything about the Rams yet, to be honest.
I don't either. I thought they were kind of balanced when I watched them play Chicago, but Chicago's terrible on offense, so it's kind of hard to get a good picture about that. And I've always thought that the Rams' offensive line was pretty bad. I mean, when the Bucs played them a year ago, of course, it was really bad. They put 55 on them, as a matter of fact. But I kind of fell out. I mean, yeah, yes, they had to travel across the country and go to Miami. It was 1,000 degrees, and you know, there's lots of excuses you can make. But really, Jared Goff played terrible. He had a couple of interceptions. Then he lost a fumble. Like I said, that when you get a defensive touchdown and a special teams touchdown, you're going to win most games. You really only need one of those. The other disappointing team. How about the Tennessee Titans losing to Tiger King Joe Burrow? You know, the Tiger King down there in Cincinnati. Who played
very
well.
The Bengal Tigers winning about as much as Ed Orgeron is at LSU this year.
Oof. Oh, yeah. It's not going well down there in the Bayou. Hope you're polishing that ring, buddy, because you're not going to get one this year. Yeah, he's got a whole new team down there, and they're not playing well at all. They got hammered over the weekend. The Broncos over the Chargers. Tell you what, Drew Locke has a little bit of swag, man. He came back on the Chargers. Poor Chargers. This is like the fifth or sixth game, I think, they had a 17-point lead and managed to blow it.
They say that's the hardest lead in football.
Yeah, right. That's seven. Boy, it's like the two-goal lead in hockey, the 17-point lead in football. You just can't hang on to it. And then John Gruden's, I tell you what, man, they beat the Browns in Cleveland. Can you figure out Baker Mayfield and the Browns for me? It seems like if anyone is a little bit good that they play, they lose.
I think they're like the Rams. I think they're a good team, but they're not the upper echelon. I mean, last week they had to come from behind with the final 11 seconds to beat the Bengals, who aren't very good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and everyone was cheering how great Baker Mayfield was in that game, and he played well, but it was the Bengals. I mean,
right.
You know, I think they're like the Rams. I think they're a good team. They beat the teams they're supposed to, and they lose to the better teams in the league.
Right. And then the game that meant a lot to the Buccaneers, as it turns out, is the New Orleans Saints winning in Chicago. They had to go into overtime to beat the Bears, who are just one of the worst offenses I think I've ever seen. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how the hell the Bucs went up there and lost to them. Of course, they had I think it was a 13-point lead, and you know, they wound up losing 20-19. They actually had the lead with under 3 minutes to go and couldn't get a first down. But you know, Nick Foles, I mean, who, you know, did a good job off the bench in the fourth quarter, end up benching Mitch Trubisky. How they don't go back to Mitch, he's just not playing well. And, you know, they're not scoring many points. You know, a week ago, I think they scored 10, and the defense had seven of those. So it's a struggle every game. They managed to tie this game up on Cairo Santos' 50-yard field goal and send it into overtime. But they're just not playing well. And the New Orleans Saints, they needed a win. They got the win. And this might be a big game, you know, as you go through the standings. Of course, to win the NFC South, the Bucs have to finish with one win better than New Orleans Saints. And then if they tie, the first tiebreakers head-to-head, which they play the Saints in a week, and so they could split that series. And then you go, well, what's next? Well, next it's, you know, usually conference record and then common opponents. Well, if you look at common opponents, the Saints beat Chicago, the Bucs lost to them. So you don't want to get into those tiebreak scenarios. If you're the Bucs, you want to win at least one more game, you know, than the Saints. But I'm not impressed with the Saints. I don't know what it is. Like, their defense makes plays. Their offense is very limited. It's mostly Alvin Kamara, occasional throw to a tight end. Of course, they haven't had Michael Thomas, and so that's a big deal, obviously. They get him back. But this is not one of the better, in my opinion anyway, it doesn't seem to be one of the better Saints teams like we've seen over the last couple of years. They can still get after you a little bit, but I couldn't figure out how much was just bad football by the Bears, which I think most of it, especially on offense, and how much was, you know, the Saints doing what they needed to do. But they went in there and they get a win in Chicago, which was something that the Bucs weren't unable to do. So you got to take your hats off to them for that. And now they are tied with Tampa Bay. Of course, the Bucs after tonight will have a game in hand. They have not had their bye week, and so the Bucs have a chance to go to 6-2 against the Giants. And you know, right now, as we do this podcast, both teams are 5-2. Which brings me to what is the best? Who is the best team in the NFC? I mean, if you look at the records, some teams are coming back to the Bucs a little bit with the two losses, but I don't. You know, I think that there's a big argument, and they have made it on television. If you watch Get Up or any of the NFL shows with their analysts like Dan Orlovsky, and I wrote about this in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com, there's almost a consensus that right now, before they play this game in the Meadowlands, that the Bucs are the best team in the NFC. I mean, you know, they certainly, the last 2 weeks, they've won by 25-plus points. Their defense is playing really, really well. If you throw out, and you can't do this, but if you throw out the Thursday night game when they were hurt and it was a short week and they had 11 penalties and did everything they could, they played great football, and Tom Brady's playing great football, 15 touchdowns, one interception in the last five games. So, you know, it's hard now to argue that they're not right there, especially with the Packers losing. You know, Seattle has one loss, but I don't think their defense is quite what the Bucs' defense is. They really rely a lot on
I think Seattle's offense is better still.
Yeah.
As good as Tom Brady is.
Yeah.
And has been. And as good as the Bucs' offense has been. I think Seattle's offense is better,
mm-hmm.
but their defense is not. I mean, I think the other team you got to start talking about is Arizona, who's got a really good defense.
Good point. Good point.
And you know, they beat Seattle. That's Seattle's only mm-hmm. loss at this point.
Right.
I think the Packers, I think their defense struggles.
For sure.
We know nobody in the NFC East matters.
Right.
The Saints would be another team up there, but I'm with you on the Saints. I mean, they're what, 5-2?
They're 5-2.
Their point differential is
plus 9.
They've
won 4 in a row. They've won 4 in a row.
Yeah, but they're plus 9 point differential. I mean,
yeah.
You know, where the Bucs are, what, plus 80 going into Monday Night Football?
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. And they're the most balanced team. I mean, if you look at, you know, they're second in sacks, you know, mm-hmm. they have 25 on the season. Pittsburgh had a couple more, so they have 30, and they've got a game in hand after Monday night. Maybe the Bucs maybe tied with Pittsburgh or something, depending on how well they do. And, you know, they're number one against the run. I mean, you know, from a defensive standpoint, they can absolutely get after you offensively. We know that Brady is on fire. We know he has plenty of weapons, and the offensive line is probably one of the best in football right now statistically. I think they've given up 8 sacks all year, none in the last 2 games. I'm not sure he's even been touched. So that offensive line is doing a good job, also creasing, you know, some teams for the running game with Ronald Jones going for 3 100-yard games before this past one when he split with Leonard Fournette. So there's an awful lot to like about the balance and the way the Bucs are playing with Tom Brady. And look, this is another chance on national TV. I mean, when they were on national TV at Chicago, it was a disaster. They got up early, then the wheels just kind of fell off. And I think there's a lot of guys on this football team that have an opportunity and want to show, you know, the rest of the league that you're the only game on town on TV that they really are playing as well as everybody thinks. And, you know, they are a favorite to win the NFC. So this is a big game in many ways, and you know, they need to go on the road and, you know, find ways to win on the road. I think their home record is certainly going to be better. So maybe Tom Brady can keep his hot streak going. I mean, he's been in a groove. They're not going to have Chris Godwin. They're still a week away from having Antonio Brown, who, by the way, we found out, and I confirmed this. Jay Glazer had the report first. Antonio Brown's living with Tom Brady.
Of course he is.
I mean, yeah, go figure. I mean,
nothing to do with this decision.
But he had nothing
remember.
To do with this except that, hey, he can live with me. I don't know how this meshes really with Giselle and the family. Like, they must be okay with it. But, I mean, there are, you know, something like, what, 10 or 12 bedrooms and about 16 baths in that house that he's living in.
I wonder if they upgraded the Wi-Fi for Antonio.
I hope they did. But at least he's got a ride to work every day, and that's the thing. Now, I hear that Antonio is in short order going to get his own place, and then I'm thinking, well, why would you? I mean, he's probably got a chef over there. He's got, you know, everything he needs. But we know at least that he'll show up because Tom will be taking him from his house and driving him to the Bucks. So that was kind of a weird story that kind of popped out on Sunday. But yeah, it's I just don't see a lot of great football and great teams trending the right way in the NFC outside of Seattle and Arizona, who beat Seattle. And so this is a big game. I mean, a chance to go 6-2. You know, the last time this football team was 6-2, they won a Super Bowl. How about that? I mean, that's how long it's been. It just doesn't happen often,
folks. That's right. I was thinking the year with Dirk, but it was 2-6, then 6-2 the back half of the year.
Right. Now, he won five.
I remember there was an 8-game stretch. They were 6-2, but it was the back half of the year, not the first half.
That's correct. That's correct. They actually, during that 6-2, they won five games in a row, which they'd only done two other times in franchise history. So, yeah, they're a hot team. And I think they, you know, in talking to Jason Pierre-Paul, I asked him, I said, are you a Super Bowl team? He goes, well, you know, everybody, you know, we are a Super Bowl team. I think we're a Super Bowl team, but what people don't realize when they say that is that, you know, we still got to put in all the work. And, you know, it just doesn't happen because you say it. You've actually got to go out there and prove it. And that's what Bruce Arians was kind of alluding to, is that they embrace the fact that a lot of people outside of their building thinks that they're the best team in the NFC, but it also is a little like elevator music. I mean, you're not good enough to believe all that. You're just going to have to go out there and continue to play and try to string wins together. But there's no doubt they're playing better. I think that's what you look at, is how are they playing. And right now, I think they're playing better than the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, but they can't look past this game. This is the quintessential sort of trap game, if you will, where, you know, you've got that big one on Sunday Night Football. But this is national television. It's the first time since that meltdown in Chicago to sort of, you know, show the rest of the country who you are and who Tom Brady is with Bruce Arians and with the Bucks. And so I think they want to have a better showing for sure. So we got a little treat for you. I had a chance over the weekend to speak with Brian Griese. Of course, everybody knows who Brian Griese was. Went to Michigan, won a Rose Bowl, won a national championship there. Then was, you know, with the Denver Broncos and succeeded John Elway. He won a Super Bowl ring with one of Elway's Super Bowls. Ended up with the Bucks here. Had two stints with the Tampa Bay Bucks. The first one ended, unfortunately for him, after a torn ACL. They were 5-1 when that occurred. They made the playoffs and lost to the Washington Redskins. I think Chris Sims was quarterbacking then. And then he was, he wanted to come back. He signed with the Chicago Bears. After a few years, the Bucks traded to get him back. So he's certainly familiar with Tampa Bay, familiar with Florida, having grown up here. And now, you know, for years and years, he was in college football. And he is now the one of the voices of Monday Night Football with Louis Riddick and Steve Levy, somebody he'd worked doing college football. And I'll let you listen to the interview. But, you know, basically he told me he loved the opportunity because he really wanted to have a chance to see the game as a quarterback again. The college game is about going fast and a lot of plays coming from sidelines and, you know, one reading this. And now he's sort of back into his element. But he's certainly going to be familiarizing himself with the Buccaneers. They call the game, you know, tonight. And then the Bucs in a few weeks will be hosting the Los Angeles Rams on Monday Night Football. And Brian will be down here. He was fun to deal with as a player. Really insightful interview about the Bucs and especially about Tom Brady, who was a teammate of his at Michigan. Greasy was a walk-on and was quarterbacking. You know, Brady was fairly highly recruited and came in 2 years behind him. And it was kind of funny. He's like, you know, hey, Brian, you're only 45, and this guy's playing at 43. But like most quarterbacks, your body breaks down before you're really ready to get out of the game, and that happened with Brian. So had fun talking to him. You'll get his insights, what he thinks about the Bucks, about his career now on Monday Night Football. So here is my interview with Brian Griese.
Well, how about you, man? Monday Night Football. What's it like being part of that legacy, that franchise?
I kind of wanted to get back into the NFL game. Been in the college game for 10 years. And while I really enjoyed college, you know, the pageantry and the traditions and all that, I kind of missed the football that I really knew, because the game in college has changed. And so I was kind of hopeful to get back in the NFL and use kind of some of my skills and experiences to analyze the game at that level. And so it was a great opportunity, and I've had a blast. You know, working with Steve Levy has, you know, been great for the past 4 years, getting to know Lewis a little bit. So it's been fun, and, you know, I'm looking forward to the rest of the season, too. We got Tampa twice in the next month or so.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and good games. And, yeah, you had become almost like a voice of college football. When I turn on college football, I hear Brian Griese all the time. And you're right, the game has changed. So how is it different? I mean, is it from an analyst standpoint, are you just able to get more into the quarterbacking side of things, the X's and O's?
Yeah, well, you know, the college game has sped up, and the style of offense had really become predicated from the sideline a lot, and a lot of the RPO systems and quarterback reading one defender and just go as fast as you can and limit the number of plays. And so the really, you know, it limited what you could analyze, right? So getting back to the NFL and quarterbacks that, you know, play was called and they're at the line of scrimmage and really responsible for seeing what the defense is doing, calling two plays in the huddle, making a determination which play is going to work, and then reading a play out. And that was just a lot more interesting to me and more familiar with the way that I played the game. And so there was a lot more I could do from an analysis standpoint.
Absolutely. And so so you got the Bucs this week. I was looking up, like, you're only 45, right? And the guy quarterbacking is 43. Can you imagine playing that long?
You know, yeah, I was kind of laughing earlier this week and looking at it, I said, yep, Tom's still 2 years younger than me. But it's a credit to him. You know, it's, you know, typically when an NFL player at any position ends up calling it quits, it's your body that tells you can't do it anymore.
That's right. Yeah.
For me, it was, you know, my arm started to deteriorate, my shoulder and my elbow, and I couldn't throw the way I needed to, and that was it. Like, there's no coming back from that. And it's a credit to Tom and you know, everything you can talk about on the field and what he's done. None of that is possible if he did not have the discipline with his body and his nutrition and everything that goes into that. You know, it's easy to say, oh, he's got TB12 and the book and the method and all that, but people don't realize what a commitment and discipline that is to do what he does every single day. Not just in season, but that's his life. And if he doesn't do that and have that discipline, then he's not doing what he's doing right now at 43.
It seems like him and, I mean, Breeze is 41, obviously, but you know, Russell Wilson has said he wants to play. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has already played 15 years, which is hard to believe. So I guess there will be a number of these guys try to do that right into their 40s.
I think so. I think it's a combination that, you know, the nutrition and the care of your body's never been better. And the rules.
Right.
The rules have never been better.
Absolutely. Especially the rules. Yeah.
I don't care if, you know, you were eating lean and doing everything right 20 years ago. You're still getting hit in the head, hit in the back, and you're not going to play 20 years.
Yeah, they've definitely protected them. So what do you were, of course, winning national titles and the Rose Bowls when Brady first got to Michigan. What do you remember about him when he was there?
Yeah, so, you know, we spent, I think, 3 years together in Michigan.
Right.
He was 2 years younger than me. And, you know, I was, I don't know if you remember, Rick, but I was the walk-on.
I do remember, so yeah.
everybody else had scholarships, but I walked on. And so I had to earn everything I got.
Yeah.
And, you know, my second year, they went out and signed the number one overall recruit in the country named Scott Drysbach.
Yep, remember, yeah.
And the second year, they bring in Tom, and Tom was a highly, you know, regarded guy as well. Mm-hmm. So it was always, you know, the next, you know, big arm guy coming in. And but I remember what was different about, you know, Tom was there was a seriousness to him, and an intentionality around what he wanted to become, and mm-hmm. To get everything out of his skill set, and he knew his weaknesses. And back then, you know, nobody really knew the upside of his strengths.
Sure.
So a lot of people focused on his weaknesses, which was, you know, movement and mobility.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why at Michigan he never really got the respect and the opportunities, as we saw later on. He had to split time with Drew Henson. So I think that molded him. And made him crystal clear and focus on how he was going to become the best player he could be, and that was sharpening the knife with respect to the mental aspect of the game, his accuracy, his leadership. And those were the things that really stood out to me.
Yeah. What do you see now when you watch him with the Bucks?
I see the same guy.
Yeah, I know, right?
You know?
Yeah.
I see the same guy.
Yeah.
And, in fact, I don't think anybody could argue that that he's playing better than he did a year ago. A lot
sure.
of that has to do with the team around him.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think you could look back 3, 4, 5, 10 years, right? I mean, look at the way he played in 2007 when they were undefeated and he was the MVP, right? I mean, I don't see a whole lot different, to be totally honest with you. And it's really amazing to see.
When you watch the Bucks, they're starting to catch their stride a little bit, but they're balanced. They got some defense. I mean, you played on a Super Bowl team, obviously, with Denver. I mean, do you see this team as one that could play into January and make it?
I don't think there's any question, Rick. You know, I think it's I think everybody wants to believe that. Certainly in Tampa, every one of those players that was on the team a year ago wants to believe that. But ultimately, you know, it's one thing to, you know, have people tell you that. It's another thing for you to expect it.
Right.
And to believe it as a player on that team.
Mm.
I don't think there's any question they're going to get to the playoffs. You know, whether they're able to beat the Saints and win the division remains to be seen. But they'll be in the playoffs. And then the question is, you know, how do you play in the playoffs? And I think more than any other reason, the benefits of bringing Tom to the team is going to be that belief, right? And expectation that when you get to the playoffs, there's been nobody better in the history of the game. And he will permeate throughout that locker room, that belief. And that's what makes what's happening in Tampa as exciting as anything going on in the NFL right now.
Yeah, for sure. What'd you think of them signing Antonio Brown?
Yeah, you know, it's you can see both sides of it.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting is the connections. I don't think people realize the amount of connections on the Bucks coaching staff.
They're all teammates, yeah.
Yeah, to Antonio. And so, you know, from Byron to Harold Goodwin to Antoine Randall-El to Larry Foote to B.A.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they all of them got together and had the conversation, and now you could have those relationships and have a guy's backs, but the question is how is Antonio going to act?
Right.
And I mean, nobody knows that, so
right.
It's a risk. There's no question, it's a risk. But I think that's what's unique about this situation. You know, nobody knew him in Oakland a year ago, and really didn't have that many touch points in New England. But this is a little bit of a different situation, but it remains to be seen if it's going to have an impact on how Antonio acts.
Right, right. You had a couple different stints here in Tampa, and I was looking. Remember, you won a lot of games here, and then, of course, had the ACL and some of the injuries and things. But what did you make of your time in Tampa? Because I know you played for a number of teams.
I loved playing in Tampa. You know, I had a great time. I really loved playing for John Gruden.
Right.
At that time, I was learning a new system that I had grown up in the Mike Shanahan.
Right.
You know, stretch zone and naked game, and this was a completely different offense, which I really enjoyed. In fact, I was talking with Jason Garrett on the phone yesterday, and we were telling stories about the quarterback room over there at One Buck.
Yeah.
That was 8 feet by 8 feet, and in that room we had myself, Brad Johnson, Chris Sims, Jason Garrett, Kyle Shanahan, John Shoup.
How about that?
We had a good old time, man. But I really enjoyed it. And that year in 2005, I think we started 5-1.
Yeah,
And had a really good team, and blew my ACL against Miami.
Yeah.
And I just remember, I know we still got to the playoffs that year, but lost to Washington. And
right.
That was a real downer, man.
You're playing good, really good football. Yeah, you're playing really good football.
I had a great time, and I really wish could have continued it. After that season,
right?
They didn't re-sign me, and they wanted me back, but Chicago, offered a better deal.
Right.
And I told John and Bruce Allen at the time, that wanted to stay. See what we can continue to build off of it, and ultimately it didn't work out, and then they traded to get me back 2 years later.
So. They let a few guys go in the Bruce Allen days, as you remember. Yeah. Think about that quarterback room you just mentioned, all those guys, how successful all of you have been throughout your careers, and then of course Jason coaching, and then all the other things. So that was a Shanahan coaching. I mean, that was quite a bunch of guys. To be around.
Sean McVay was there a couple of years later. It was quite a hotbed. I enjoyed my time there. I look forward to getting down there in a month or so and then coming back for the Super Bowl.
That was great to catch up with Brian Griese. My thanks to him, and I hope you guys enjoy him calling that Monday Night Football game.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We've got some Rays news that occurred since we last spoke, and that is that the Rays have failed or decided not to pick up the options on pitcher Charlie Morton and catcher Mike Zunino. So, Morton is a guy that has sort of hinted at retirement.
Mm-hmm.
I read the story that Mark Tompkin wrote when they decided not to pick up his option. He had, I guess, a long text message to him. And it essentially said, look, I got to reassess everything, and not saying that I want to go someplace else or that I want to play or that I don't want to play there. But he obviously had a contract where the option would have paid him $15 million. They're not in it for that. And I'm sure they'd love to have him back, but, at a different price. And now he's a free agent. It's in Charlie Morton's hands where he wants to live, where he wants to play, how much he wants to make. They also didn't pick up the option on Mike Zunino, who – really good defensive catcher, but let's be honest. I mean, did not hit at all. Didn't provide even the home run power consistently like they were hoping. If he'd hit around 200 and, popped about 20 home runs in a 162-game season, they would have been more than pleased with him, but they didn't get it. And then, watching Michael Perez get claimed off waivers by the Pirates, I mean, that essentially leaves them with what at the catching position?
They have one catcher on their 40-man roster, Ronaldo Hernandez, who's a young guy. Hasn't played above single A, I don't believe. He's one of the highest-ranked prospects in their system, and expect him to play, assuming everything goes off in 2021, double A and move up. I mean, I don't think you'll see him in 2021 at the big league level, but maybe late in the season he gets a cup of coffee. But Morton and Zunino was more about the salary. I think the Rays would like both of them back, and I think both are willing to look at it. Morton may depend if he wants to play or not, or if he retires. you know, he lives in Sarasota, would like, you know, the Rays is ideal for him. So, you know, is he willing to take 7, 8 mil, 10 mil, whatever, you know, what would he be willing to play for? Mm-hmm. And would the Rays match that? Zunino, I think his option was for $4.5 million. I think the Rays would like him back, but not at that level. Maybe it's $3 million, something like that. Who knows? But the Rays did, they had to put some players on waivers, and the only one that got claimed was Michael Perez, as you said, by the Pirates. So a few other free agencies, and they had to reinstate guys like Jalen Beeks and Yanni Chirinos and Colin Poche to their 40-man roster. They had been on the 60-day injured list or 45, whatever it was this year. Everything was changed this year, but with COVID. So Andrew Kittredge, Chaz Rose, both passed through waivers. They're minor league free agents now, things like that. So, but they will have to make some moves for their 40-man roster, as they're going to have to put some prospects on before November 20th. To avoid getting them claimed in the Rule 5 draft, guys like Josh Lowe and Taylor Walls, possibly two guys. So they may have some more moves coming up. But, we know the Rays make a lot of moves, and they tend to make them late. They don't tend – free agency starting now, so they don't tend to be the ones doing it right away. They kind of wait and see how everything plays out and see who's left available and who's looking for a place to play. So that's kind of the way the Rays do business. So,
is there a possibility – do you think that there is a – going to be a lucrative market for Charlie Morton? In other words, could somebody come and say, we love the way you pitch, if you'll pitch one more year, we'll pay you closer to $15 million or $10 million than you could ever get with the Rays?
I don't know, because I think free agency is going to be interesting, and I think you're seeing it in some of the other sports, hockey for one, which has already started free agency. What's next year look like?
Right.
Are there fans in the stands? And the money they've lost. Are there none? Are there... I think you might see a lot of guys get one-year deals, or, Taylor Hall for the Sabres, signed a one-year deal for $8 million, and it's a, let me get to next season when I think there's going to be more long-term money, because hopefully things have recovered some. Now, Morton's not looking for a long-term deal, so is there a team that feels they might be a piece away and it would pay him $15 million? Maybe. What else I could see happening is June or July next year, and some team goes, hey, we got a couple starters down. Would you come out of retirement and play for us for half a season?
Yeah, exactly.
If he decides he's not going to start the season. I mean, he might get that where if he says I'm retiring, but he might get some calls midway through the season going, hey, we lost a couple starters. Here's, $7 million for the rest of the year to play. Could that happen? Sure, absolutely.
Him being close to home and all that, and he talks a lot about his family, and of course, this does not – preclude him from somebody saying, here's $15 million and he'll go play for him. But I tend to think that he really does like being with his team. He says he's had the most fun of his career. Mm-hmm. As long as it's not – look, everybody says, well, what's your price? And you think, well, you made 15. Let's say, is 6 enough? Is 10 enough? Is 8 enough? And the bottom line is there is a number where it just isn't worth it to them. And none of us would – can think of it in those terms, because we would think, well, geez, what wouldn't you do for $1 million, much less 6 or 8 or 12 or 3 or whatever. But he's played a long time, and clearly he's made tons of money, and doesn't necessarily need to play baseball, but you don't know
some may depend where it is too. If the Dodgers come calling and say, hey, we need another starter, you go,
you're going to move to Los Angeles?
Well, but I got a good shot to win a World Series. Or is it the Kansas City Royals calling where you're going,
Right, absolutely.
I don't think the Royals are going to offer him a one-year deal at 15 mil. But, you might look at the situation, too. Maybe he wants to stay East Coast. Or, what if the Marlins came calling?
Right.
And you go, well... my still family can come down on weekends to from Sarasota. Maybe I'm willing to do that more. Or Atlanta, compared to Seattle, which now you're all the way across the country. So,
yeah. Well, it's not a slam dunk he's back. It's also not a slam dunk he plays baseball. So,
I would think if he's going to take less money to play, the Rays would be the first choice of him, it sounds like, based on the way he's talked for the last two seasons here.
Yeah,
but you never know, and that's part of free agency. He's earned the right to pick where he wants to play, or if he wants to play at all. So, and Mike Zunino the same way. They didn't pick up the option, so you know, he could go elsewhere, or, you know, maybe he resigns with the Rays. And it depends on what the market is, too. I mean, you know, sometimes Zunino may go out there and there isn't a market for him. I mean, who knows?
Right. Right. Well, we'll figure out here sooner or later. You know, the Champa Bay, we were talking about the Rowdies having an opportunity to add to that legacy. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. One of the weirdest endings to a sports season just occurred.
Well, as we're taping this right now, it should be about halftime of the championship game between the Rowdies and Phoenix. But there were several positive COVID tests for the Rowdies, and so they've called off the game and canceled it. And there will not be a championship. So the Rowdies have to settle for conference champions instead of USL champions. So Phoenix the same way. They're the Western Conference champion.
Man, that's crazy. Seems like you could wait a week or two and maybe play that thing somewhere. But great year for the Rowdies.
Yeah, man. You'd have to wait probably at least 2 weeks, and then you're assuming more doesn't happen or spread. But they decided to cancel it altogether. So,
yeah, interesting. And some news about the Lightning in the Stanley Cup. I didn't know this. You're telling me, you're giving me some knowledge here that, you know, I always remember when a team wins the cup, they get possession of the cup for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And very often you'll see it around town, which we have. But then individually, guys get their time with it.
Right.
And that's going to occur. It hasn't occurred yet, but a new caveat here with what's happened with the Stanley Cup since the Lightning won it.
The Stanley Cup just returned to Tampa Bay on Sunday, and it has the names of the players who won the Stanley Cup on it.
Wow.
Now, what's different about it is generally when the cup is won, the team gets it, and then the players start having their days with it. You know, wherever, Russia or Canada or my home in New York or Minnesota, wherever you want to go for your day, you get your day.
Sure.
But with COVID, they're still working out how they're going to try to do this because everything's different. I mean, you can't just be throwing parties everywhere.
Right.
And then, you know, traveling, you know, you go to Canada and anyone who goes with the cup has to quarantine for 14 days before you can do anything. And, you know, so there's a lot of logistics of figuring all that out. So the cup was engraved already. Normally, the first time players see their names on the cup is usually the night they raise the banner and celebrate the Stanley Cup because it's done late. But they didn't know what to do, and they haven't figured out all the protocols and how they're going to do everything, they've already engraved the names on the cup. So Lightning tweeted out and put on Facebook some pictures of it. Victor Hedman was looking at it, you know, taking a picture of his names on the cup and stuff like that. So the names are on the Stanley Cup now, which is generally done much later in the offseason, right before the season begins instead of right away.
Which is the greatest reward and career goal of every player that plays in the National Hockey League is to get their name on that cup. And it's got to be a surreal feeling for those guys.
Yeah, you say, it's funny, you say it's forever, but I remember Phil Esposito during these playoffs saying, I think it's 8 more years and my name's off the cup.
Yeah, it's gone. They keep moving it up, right?
Because, yeah, and what they do
the
is...
new ones come at the bottom.
Yeah,
the
when a strip or a band fills up, then they move everything up, and then the one that's taken off the cup goes in the Hockey Hall of Fame. So it's not the lost. It's shown in the Hockey Hall of Fame, but I think it takes like 50 some years or six, you know, depending on where on the band, if you're the first names on the band or last, you know, how many years it takes. But yeah, I think Phil said he's got 7 or 8 more years till he's off the cup. So,
wow, that's incredible. Well, it's like I said, it's going to be fun for those guys to spend time with it and just kind of stare at those engravings because that's something rare indeed. All right. Well, I'm off to the greater New York, New Jersey area, and it is a night game. It is Monday night football.
New York just put in new protocols where you have to have a negative COVID test before you go. I guess you're getting tested all the time, so you have that test.
I have no idea whether I have it or not. I don't know what they're going to tell me I can do.
Well, because New York just announced that people traveling from anywhere else outside of like Philly, Connecticut, New Jersey has to have a negative COVID test 3 days before you enter New York.
And how do I prove that? Can I just show them my test?
I don't know. That's a good question. I just thought about that as we're talking because I read that over the weekend.
Perhaps I won't be at the game tonight. Breaking news. I don't know anything about this. I mean, I do have a COVID test, but my last one, I don't know if it was 3 days ago. It would have been Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yeah, I guess I'd be okay.
If you get Saturday tests, you're okay. Yeah, you'll be fine.
But I'd have to show them my result from the lab.
Yeah, most likely. You probably have the... the app or whatever. Doesn't the NFL do that all on an app or something?
Well, they send it to you.
Yeah.
I hope it didn't delete the last one. I may have.
I want to check your deleted folder.
You know, we've got a problem to work out, so we better call it a day here. We will be talking after the game tomorrow. I don't know where from, whether I will be in my home or actually at MetLife Stadium, but regardless, Steve is giving me information that I could have used 24 hours ago. But and we look forward to talking to you again. Thanks for listening to the podcast as always. And please, please go see our friends at Old Northeast Jewelers. If you're from St. Petersburg, you know these folks. They're in 4th Street in their St. Pete location. They've been there for years. It's a great store. And now they have a new store in Hyde Park. If you're walking around down there, beautiful Hyde Park Village, it's at 1607 West Swan Avenue. They got the Grand Seiko. Go check that out. And if you go in there, make sure you tell them that Rick and Steve sent you, and they're going to give you one extra year warranty on your purchase. So that's certainly worth your time. All right. I think I'm off to New York. We'll find out all together tomorrow on the podcast. For Steve Burstick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.